The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department of Dominican University of California. Hello and welcome to Blooming Rainbow, a podcast about the struggles and history of the LGBTQ plus community. And now your host, Stephanie Nunez. Good morning or afternoon or whenever you're listening to this. I just want to start off by saying thank you so much for listening today. I really appreciate it because as someone who is not tech savvy at all, this is definitely a bit difficult to do, so please bear with me. All right, let's get into it. So as you've already heard, my name is Stephanie Nunez. My pronouns are she, her, and I identify as part of the LGBTQ plus community. But I don't really label my sexuality simply because I don't think everything has to be labeled. Also, I'm still trying to really figure it out and solidify exactly who I am, what I am, which is very hard to do, especially when there's so much going on, such as moving to a whole different city and being alone. But that's another thing. I think being alone is really going to help me because I get to be in my own thoughts and figure out who I am without anyone really interfering. Anyway, that was my own little intro. Now we can get into today's topic, which is the struggle of not being able to publicly come out. In addition, I will be giving you a super small background on some organizations and laws on the LGBTQ plus community here in America. I think everyone can agree that coming out is extremely hard, and I think it really depends where you're from and who you're surrounded by. For example, I grew up in a traditional Latina household where it was not technically shamed, but it definitely wasn't something that was heard of often. And if it was, you were labeled as the gay one and singled out whenever people would talk to you. I remember instances where we would go to family parties and whenever a specific person came up that just so happened to be gay, they were reduced to just that, as if that was the only thing that mattered. And that really stuck with me as a 7-year-old. And because of that, and because of the comments like that, I was so scared of coming out, and knowing that my family thought that way and acted that way, it obviously didn't make it any easier. So also, because of that, I always made sure to dress the way my mom wanted me to, or I would make it a point to talk to my mom about boys I was interested in just so she wouldn't suspect anything. To this day, I have not come out to anyone in my family except to my brother. And that's just because I love him a lot. And I know that he isn't going to hate me for it or banish me from the family, which thinking about that right now is funny because I just ended a year-long relationship with my ex-girlfriend and my parents know nothing about that. It sucks because I wish I could have and could talk to my mom and receive her comfort through all of this, but I unfortunately can't. But what I do have is a group of incredibly supportive friends back home that have and are helping me so much. I love and appreciate them more than they could ever possibly know. And now, well, I have you. And for that, I'm also extremely appreciative. Another thing I want to bring up before we get down to the real essence of this podcast is the fact that the community has had a tough fight for their rights to simply just be and to even marry, to get acknowledged enough to marry. I don't know about you, but that is still absolutely crazy to me. And even now, still, I get so upset by it. But the community has come a long way. But there is also room for improvement, whether that be within the community or external factors. I'm done getting my own little personal thoughts. Let's get down to just a super small and just random history timeline of the LGBTQ plus community here in America. All right. In 1920... the Society for Human Rights, which is the first gay rights organization, was founded by Henry Gerber in Chicago, and he had immigrated from Germany. The organization ceased to exist because 2 months after it was officially chartered by the state of Illinois, all the members, including the founder, were arrested on obscenity charges. And you can't see me, but I did air quotes on the word obscenity. And you know what's funny about this whole thing? When I first read about it, I was kind of confused, it was funny. The person who tipped them off was a wife of a member. So a member's wife tipped them off to the police. And I just wonder what was going on in her mind when she did this. I tried finding some more on this, but I unfortunately couldn't find like personal interviews of her. But I wonder if she was just scared that her husband was a part of the community himself, you know, or if they were almost like spies, or if it was like an inside job. I just thought that was really interesting, and I wanted to share that with you. Okay, fast forward to 1950, the U.S. Congress issued the report entitled Employment of Homosexuals and Other Sex Perverts in Government. And it was distributed to members of Congress after the federal government had covertly investigated employees' sexual orientation. The report stated that since homosexuality was a mental illness, homosexual constitutes security risks to the nation. Again, I don't know about you, but it always makes me sad and mad that people still believe. And I know this happened in 1950, but the fact that that was even an ideology to begin with makes me very upset. It just frustrates me when people who are part of the community are referred to or even grouped up with perverts. It just normalizes referring to us as that. And I think it creates a lot of harm, actually, because there are a lot of people who use the government and their laws and things like that as a way to promote or even justify their hateful ideologies. So a lot of people still carry those thoughts today, and it harms the community a lot, actually. For example, we saw this a lot with the transgender and gender neutral bathrooms. A lot of people were concerned that those who identified as transgender would go into bathrooms and do atrocious things to children, women, or even to other men. And we can just see how that thinking is still stuck with us today, and just how harmful it really is. I keep saying that it's harmful, that it's really bad, but sometimes it feels as if it doesn't matter how many times we say it, people still won't believe you. And here's another government-related part of the timeline. In 1953, on April 27th, President Dwight D. Eisenhower issued an executive order that banned homosexuals from working for the federal government, stating that they were a security risk. This order stayed in place until 1993, when President Bill Clinton and the U.S. Congress enacted the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that's a whole other topic I could get into, but I'll give it its own little episode in the future for you to listen to. Okay, now 1955 is when the Daughters of Bilitis, the first lesbian rights organization, was founded in San Francisco, California, by Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin. They hosted private social functions because they feared police raids, threats of violence, and discrimination in bars and clubs. The organization lasted until 1969. The organization had a messy ending, but I'll summarize it for you as best as I can. This specific organization also had a lesbian publication. It was a magazine, basically. In order to keep the subscribers' identity safe, there was only two lists of the subscribers. And it turns out that within the organization, there were certain people who managed the magazine on their own. So it was a whole different sector of the group. And the people who managed the magazine actually stole one of the lists, and the founders did not know of this. So when they realized that the list was missing, they freaked out and they panicked, and they thought that maybe the government or some other agency had taken it, because that, you know, is a thing that the government does. It gets involved in things that really aren't any of its business. The founders realized, though, who had taken it and called it theft. But because that list had been taken over state lines, it was now a federal matter. And they did not have the resources to see it through, unfortunately. So the person that stole the list cut all ties with the organization and its founders, which is really bad, because the person that stole the list was the one that was running the magazine. And the magazine was their way of communicating with the people. With no way of communicating to the people, the organization, unfortunately, began to fall apart. This ultimately led to the magazine's end in 1972. The organization had, of course, its main group, its main chapter, but there was also little chapters around the states and also around the world, which is quite a victory. But unfortunately, the main organization ended anywhere between 1969 through 1970, around there, with some chapters those that were around the world and around the U.S. ending in 1995. And it really surprised me to see how many organizations there were before our time, I guess you could say. I think it's very important that we acknowledge them because they have fought so hard for themselves and for us. For example, I am able to make this podcast because of them. I am able to feel a bit safer because of their efforts. There are so many people that go unnamed and so many people that don't get credit for everything that they have done for the community, but I think it really falls onto us to be those people that are grateful for them fighting for themselves and fighting for us in a way. And we have so many resources that they didn't have. For example, here at Dominican, when you go to the bathrooms, there's little QR codes and there are signs that say that you can come into this bathroom if you feel that it is right for you. And just that sense of belonging and that sense of safety is something that they didn't have, and it's something they fought for that they probably never received in their lifetime, but we get to reap those benefits now. And by having those resources, you and I can be those new people. You and I can be the people who make others a part of the community feel even just a little bit safer. It's crazy for me to think about it. I don't know about you, but just how far everything really has come and how far everything has changed, and we've taken things to court and we've gotten recognition and our lives have value. They always have, but more people see it that way now. And I believe that that is a win. I remember when gay marriage was legalized, I was so happy and I didn't know why. Little Stephanie did not know why. She was so happy. In my denial stage, I guess you could call it, and I was there for a long time. It really wasn't until my sophomore year in high school that I realized why. And it was all because of this girl who played basketball. She walked into my AP Euro class one day and I just knew. I just instantly knew that I was not straight. And it's a funny story because in that second, I just stopped fighting it. I saw her walk in and it clicked, and I just had to be okay with it. And it's not like I didn't know her, because I did. I wasn't weird. We were somewhat friends, I guess you could say. So this is to that girl, if you're listening, and she knows who she is. Thank you. But going back to what I was talking about, it is such a relieving feeling to know that I could feel that way. I could feel that way and act on it without being attacked or critiqued or bullied or just... I knew I was safe. I knew I was safe because of the people that I surrounded myself with and the clubs that I was joining and the teachers that I had and the administration that was there. I knew it was okay. I, in my being, knew that it was okay. Sure, I haven't come out to my parents. I haven't come out to my family, but I know that it's okay and I know that I'm not wrong. And that is why I say that it falls on us to create those spaces for those who are still afraid and worried of coming out. I know, and you know, that it's not an easy thing to do. And if I can do something about that, and if you can do something about that, why would we not? Why would we not want to create a safe space? Both of us know how hard it is to find that unity, to find that, just like I said, a relieving feeling. It's not simple. And if it was simple for you, then be grateful for that, because not everyone has it. And I'll keep saying it, it falls on us. We are the new generation. We are the people that get to make those decisions and create long-lasting effects. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's a beautiful thing of change that we can create. And I'll leave you with that. I'll let you go enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I really hope you'll be back next week for episode 2 of this podcast. So once again, just thank you so, so much.